everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Robert McFarlane, and welcome to the show. It's a thinly veiled mental health check-in for two broken brain best friends. Healing through film. Healing, I tell you.
Yeah, buddy.
So before we get into what we're doing, you know, which is important, I don't feel it's as important as how are you doing, bud? How did this film help you this week?
I'm all right. I'm sort of aggressively mediocre, if I'm honest with you, buddy.
Like,
smack bang, middle of the road. having a bit of a wobble. Bit of a wobble. It's all right, though.
Yeah.
My chest is fucked, man. It was like, I genuinely shit myself that I was having a heart attack last week, so that was nice.
Yeah, but you're playing the game of heart attack or panic attack? Either way, I'm having to play defense.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm playing right now. And I'm sort of dancing.
Yeah.
I don't know what side of the line I'm dancing on right now, but I'm fucking dancing.
The best panic defense is a panic attack. I read that in a book once.
Yeah. There you go. The best attack is a shit defense. It's probably something someone said right before they got battered by an attack. But I'm having the sobriety thing's a bit fucked. Honestly, man, I keep fucking hovering around the alcohol aisles a little too long.
Right, okay.
That's a rough one.
Looking's free, mate. It's prostitution rules.
Yeah.
Looking is free.
But being as relapse isn't an option, and it won't ever be an option, I've had to find an outlet. So right. Diablo 4.
Are the only thing more destructive than alcoholism.
Yeah. The only thing to rot my brain faster. Lots of video games. But this film helped me because it was a bunch of familiar faces, a few of my favorite people, and all the good vibes.
Aww.
How about you, man?
It's been a very busy week. We've been a man down at work, and it's a small team. So like anytime someone's away,
oh shit,
it's just you get 33% extra work.
Yeah.
This film helped me because it was 2 hours where I could turn my brain off and live in a world where pink slime was the biggest thing I had to worry about. It was lovely.
Yeah, that and Slimer's driver's license, right?
I've got my own driver's license now, mate. Slimer can fucking do one. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That doesn't scare me anymore. Used to be.
Yeah.
Ask me 2 weeks ago, I'd have felt a little bit infantilized by the fact that even fucking Slimer had a license. I'd be like, he's a green bag of shit. And he's able, he's passed his test. I fucking haven't. I'm a 35-year-old man. But now, mate, I can take my mum's car out and feel like a big boy.
There you go. That's the big boy. Today, buddy, we are doing Ghostbusters 2.
Woo.
We're carrying on with our Ghostbusters series. Do the sequels make the original a better film? And why? Is the Ghostbusters original 1984 film such a hard movie to sequel? This is what we endeavor to find out.
I think every first film in the franchise is excellent. And I think that's the only thing wrong with 2016 is that it didn't start fresh.
I have thoughts on this. We will get into this, not next week, but the week after. Our next Ghostbusters episode, we will get into that.
And you've done all the research this week. I've written the breakdown, but you've done all the research. You've gone deep. So I want to know, there's things I want to know.
Literally.
When did this come out? How much did it make? Why does it live?
Okay, that's a great question, which I hadn't pondered until this rewatch and all of the research. And I was like, why? It came out in 1989. Ooh. On a $37 million budget. It made $215 million at the box office, and even so was considered a commercial failure by Columbia Pictures. Super fun times.
Those that listened to our last episode will remember that my personal theory is that Ghostbusters 1 only happened because men are unwilling to back down in a meeting. And I think it was like, you can have your money, but you know, got to do it in a year. Yeah, I will do. And I reckon that same sort of mindset is the reason they thought this was a failure. Because I think before this movie had come out, they'd already spent $250 million. They were like, it's fine.
Maybe.
Ghostbusters 2 is coming out. We've done that. You and I have done that back when we were back in our wilder, younger days.
Yeah.
It's all right. I'm getting paid on Friday. I can afford this.
I can afford to bankrupt myself with a cocaine debt right
now. Yeah, exactly.
Fine. And then when I get paid, I'm 400 quid shy. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did take 6 days off work because of the cocaine.
Right, exactly.
That's probably going to have an effect on my debt.
And I think that's exactly what Columbia Pictures did. They're like, it's fine. We've got 250 mil coming in as soon as Ghostbusters 2 is out.
Yeah, fuck it. Let's finance everything. You want to make a film about a pig that can talk? Boom. Done it. There you go, babe.
We'll make a sequel. Put him in the city. Job done.
Oh, boom. I don't even know if that was Columbia Pictures. It's just a fucking stupid movie. 1989. Fucking huge year for movies. Roadhouse, Toxic Avenger Part 2, Friday the 13th Part 8, Blood Fist, Kickboxer, Back to the Future 2. Indiana Jones Last Crusade.
Okay, there's finally got to a film that I've seen. Yeah, cool.
Dead Poets Society. See, I put one in for you.
Thank you.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
Of course.
Batman. That one's for you.
That one is for me. That one
the
is
The Burbs. Neat. And this one's for you. Look Who's Talking. There you go.
Disgusting.
It's all for you, babe.
Disgusting.
All for
Why
you.
Why are we covering Ghostbusters 2, Ben? It's not because we're covering every Ghostbusters movie ever. Because we do. We pick a franchise, but every movie's got its own reason. Why particularly is Ghostbusters 2 interesting to you, bud?
So Ghostbusters, to me, as a franchise, the first movie has always been an escape for me. It's always been an escape. It's a comfort blanket. It is my go-to when I'm feeling sad, when I'm panicky, when I'm fucking wobbly. It's Ghostbusters all the way, man. It's just, it's a grounding technique that I've developed over the years. Healthy or unhealthy, it works.
Wireless headphones were invented just so you could have the Ghostbusters theme playing 24/7 when you're having a bad week.
Yes.
You're just in the alcohol aisle going, I ain't afraid of no vodka.
I ain't afraid of no yeast. Just whiffing the beers. I ain't afraid of no yeast. But I am, though. I am, though. That's why I'm sober. So does the sequel to the greatest performing comedy ever live up to its predecessor? And why does everyone hate it?
I mean, you've answered the first question with the second question there, haven't you?
I have. I have indeed. See what I did there? See what I did there? Foreshadowing!
Ooh.
So, I saw Ghostbusters 2 as a child. Not as much as Ghostbusters 1, but it was still a fair whack that I watched this film. I don't enjoy the story the same way that I do Ghostbusters 1, but that's because I think it's a little bit shallower. It's a little bit less dark.
A little bit.
It's still funny, but it's more TV game show host funny than it is biting funny.
There's
you know
no
what I mean?
Bite.
And I still really fucking enjoy it.
Dana's baby's got more bite in this film.
Maybe. I've never been bitten by Dana's baby, so... But Ghostbusters 2, it's a gem in the rough. I feel like it gets a lot of unnecessary hate. I feel like it's you do have to do a little work with it. You have to find the good in the bad. Yeah. You have to persist through the bad to get to the good timeline. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
How about you? When did you first see this?
Oh, this was another VHS. I think this was one that we did actually legally own. Like, I remember the cover. I don't remember watching it all that much. It's much more like Ghostbusters 2 has been one of those movies that I'll watch 40 minutes at a time of once a year when I'm scrolling through channels and like, oh, Ghostbusters 2. And I'll leave it on for a bit.
Right.
Until I get a text, you know, or it's bedtime.
That's quite upsetting to hear, but it's fine.
It's good.
That's fine.
It's Ghostbusters. Do you know what I mean? But I've got some... I think my thinking is very much in line with a lot of people's thinking on Ghostbusters 2, and we'll get into it.
All right.
Before we do, not everyone's seen this film very recently. Some of you may have only watched it 40 minutes at a time when it's been on telly. So I've written a little breakdown section.
Okay. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. I feel like we should have a theme for this section.
We need. I really want a jingle. Can we have a jingle soon?
We can have a jingle. I've had an idea. Mm-hmm. Also,
you're Mr. Music Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's sort us out
a jingle. And also, in a slight change of programming, I think you can read the breakdown this week.
Yeah, I can. I'm looking at it. You've done white ink on a white background, so I can't read it. But I am looking at it, and it is very long.
It's not that long.
So I'm going to try.
Not that long. I think it'll be quicker. Right, you ready?
All right. The Ghostbusters are back! 5 years after toasting Stay Puft's marshmallow cheeks in front of every citizen in New York, Bustin has gotten a little thin on the ground with fewer ghost sightings than ever. Since we last checked in with our favorite gang of barely competent exterminators, ghost busting is a little less legal. So Ray and Winston have become birthday clowns for spoilt kids. Egon's gone academic, and Venkman's shystering psychics on public access TV is a good way of putting it. Ex-gatekeeper and certified legend Dana works at the local museum restoring art. I love how you put local museum and not like the New York Museum.
It's a local,
you
know, museum, what I mean? Like,
it is the local museum.
It's the local to New York Museum.
Yeah, I got you. I just thought it was a funny way of putting it. Thank you. Dana works at the local museum restoring art and birthed a child with an absentee violin player when suddenly the Sproglet is taken for a pram theft auto by an unseen force. Dana's boss is a delightful kook named Janusz.
Love him.
Whose sense of whimsy and fun is matched only by his totally L-Riz. Awful. Awful.
Love it.
Can't believe that's the thing that I've just said out loud. Good stuff. He only has two passions, restoring art and creating a sexually uncomfortable work environment for his employees. A large oil painting of some old fucker comes in. He soon discovers it to be more haunted than Liam Neeson's face when you ask how his wife is doing. Buddy. Okay. Fuck me. The spirit of Viggo the Destroyer, full-time big bad evil guy and part-time art model, commands him to find a child. Any child. It just has to be a child so that he can be reborn into it. Janusz, rather than simply going downstairs to the play area, decides he has the perfect kid in mind. Dana's, of course.
How you doing, bud?
Yeah, this is good. To be honest, mate, it is bang on exactly what the film is so far. Good. The Liam Neeson thing, bit much, but fine. It's fine. In order to investigate Dana's case of the baby stroller and the strong breeze, the Ghostbusters get the band back together, swiftly discovering a literal river of slime under the city streets. But the authorities are much more concerned about the literal saviors of New York digging a hole without a permit. Put them on trial for illegal Ghostbuster activities. Where the slime is swiftly revealed to shit out ghosts when exposed to bad vibes.
Tell me I'm wrong.
In the face... No, you are. This is like absolutely bang on. In the face of incontrovertible evidence...
Nailed it.
In the face of Hold on one sec. In the face of incontrovertible evidence of ghosts, the judge gives them free rein to resume ghost busting as... and where they please. New York, though, isn't it? It's just New York. All right, good stuff. Attacked by a gross pink cum monster whilst trying to take a bath, Dana is forced to stay at Venkman's. Forced to. No other opportunities anyway.
No hotels. Not in New York.
None. Not for a fucking wealthy cellist / art restoration person.
He's got the insurance payout from her last place going on fire, you know?
Yeah, I guess. An opportunity for them to rekindle their long-dead romance, sadly cock-blocked by Venkman actually having real work to do, solving the slime issue. The Ghostbusters figure out the slime is being fed by the negative emotions of the citizens of New York City, with all streams leading to the museum taking the next 20 minutes to doss about ineffectively, get covered in the stuff, and take the findings to the mayor.
Yep.
What? I'm sorry, I skipped ahead a line that I already don't want to read this. Fuck's sake. What follows is a weird argument where everyone seems to have worse memories than Jeffrey Epstein's prison guards about what happened literally in front of them, ending with the Ghostbusters getting committed to psychiatric hospital to only be immediately released when Ghostageddon hits critical mass. Right. Janusz used the minute-long detention of our heroes to turn into a ghostly Quidditch player and steal Dana's baby away from her, leading to a final showdown between the Ghostbusters and Viggo Mortensen's granddad. Our villain tries to Ian Watkins himself inside the bay. Fuck me, man. Our villain tries to Ian Watkins himself inside the baby, but is defeated by the positively charged goo the Ghostbusters have refined from the city-spanning sludge. Shit me, mate. This is rife. This is rife. This, combined with a sing-along from the crowd below, are more than enough to completely banish Viggo back to the Shadow Realm.
No questions.
Image of the franchise. No questions. No questions whatsoever, buddy. Villain vanquished, our heroes now see that the frightening frame now holds the most horrific image of the franchise. The Ghostbusters rendered in oil paint, wearing togas and holding a baby. The concept art, of which you can buy from propstore.com right now, if you have $5,000 and absolutely no taste whatsoever. Yeah. Is that true? Can you actually buy that for $5,000?
Yes, it's on Prop Store right now. Yes, you can.
Ooh,
you're about to take out a loan, aren't you?
Okay. To recap, Bustin' is banned. Babies are bewitched. Bustin' is unbanned before blasting to banish Big Bad Bringing Bliss.
Nailed it, mate.
Cunt. Cunt for that last one. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. All right, I'm into it. Okay. I'm into it.
I mean,
how do you feel about Ghostbusters 2?
I mean, buddy? I feel I may have just made that clear, but...
Yeah. I mean, you're not too far off the beaten track.
No,
you know what I mean?
It's a very messy film. It feels like they've been given... like a list of stuff that needs to be in there.
Right.
It feels like they've just thrown all the shit at the wall and tried to find a way to pack in as much happening as possible. But in the process, very little happens.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like in Ghostbusters where there's big developments. It's very much the problem that they start with is the problem that they end with.
Yeah.
And it just sort of ticks around with them maniacally doing stuff and people being brought in.
Yes.
And it not really all coming together into more than the sum of its parts. It's like just a maniacal list of stuff that all happens and then the film ends.
Right.
Like Rick Moranis is
back. Just described every fucking Charlie Chaplin film that ever exists.
Yeah, it's just that this is 70 years later, Ben, so I was kind of hoping to see some development in the art form.
Absolutely not. How dare you?
Look, you know, one of my favorite characters, Lewis Tully, you know, played by the great Rick Moranis, is brought in to just be a shit lawyer for a bit.
Yeah.
And then they can't really figure out how to get him back in. So they sort of swerve one of the romance plots where suddenly, Janine Melnitz, receptionist extraordinaire, is no longer in to Egon. She's randomly in to Lewis, and they have sex in Dana's apartment.
Yeah, I don't think it's random, though.
No.
A, as a child, Rick Moranis, Lewis Tully, is my fucking idol.
Yeah.
For that, because Janine Melnitz was like my childhood crush, one of my childhood crushes. So to see Rick Moranis, Lewis Tully...
Yeah.
Be the object of desire in her eyes. I was like, there is hope.
Right.
I feel like hope.
I feel like Lewis Tully's body count in this franchise is pretty mint. He is 2 for 2 at this point.
He is 2 for 2.
I mean, he was a dog when he had sex with Dana.
Still counts.
My guy's hit rate is 100% right now.
I get it, right? Lewis Tully is, you can almost see the shoehorn.
It's literally that. There's visible shoehorns in this film everywhere.
I get it, because it's a little bit of fan service.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of, he was an integral part of Ghostbusters 1. How do we get him back into it? Let's just make a funny joke that he did, you know, night school to become a lawyer.
Right.
Who mainly looks after, like, fucking tax law and stuff like this to build on him being an accountant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I get it.
I do.
You are right. It's very messy. It's very shoehorny. Am I glad that it's there? 1,000% yes.
Of course.
The romance between him and Janine, super forced, shoehorny. Am I glad it's there? 1,000%
And that's kind of the mantra of this film.
1,000%
That's kind of the mantra of this film. It's like, it's messy. It's not as good as it could be. Am I glad it exists? Yes. And I think that's my takeaway, going to be my takeaway at the end. Even after we've chatted for an hour, I'll be surprised if you change my mind from, I hate this, but I'm glad it exists. Because, like, it's Ghostbusters 2. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, it feels like...
Yeah.
I love Ghostbusters 1. You love Ghostbusters 1. It feels like getting together with a woman that you really, really love. And then at the end of the night, she goes, you know that this is meaningless, right? You know that this doesn't mean anything. This is just for fun.
Wow.
Like, this is just for fun. It's all the good stuff. And they're just back again. But it's not for any reason other than because we're just, you know, it's just something to do, isn't it?
Look, do you know what I think it is? I don't think it's that. I think this is a big push from the studio.
Right.
The Ghostbusters 2 is a huge push from Columbia Pictures, right? They were actively pushing for a sequel for years. Right. And it was Bill Murray that was like, I don't really want to do it because it's just to make money.
Yes.
Like, there's no real reason to do this other than to just to make money.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Bill Murray has said, yeah, I agree too.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray said in an interview that he was tricked into doing Ghostbusters 2. And it's
how?
Incredible.
Did he just get bundled into the back of a van? And then, like, did he think he was... was he turning up to an apartment for sex and just got drugged? Like,
no, there was a story that was written.
Right.
And pitched to him after, I think it was his agent who looked after Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray. They all shared the same agent. He organized them getting into a room with a couple of people from Columbia and the rest of the cast and the rest of the crew from Ghostbusters 1. And it was just to sit down to try and clear the air because there was a new chairman at Columbia Pictures. And they were like, look, let's clear the air. Let's get it all, you know, done and dusted. Let's put it all to bed. And being in the room, they were pitched a story that Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd had written.
Right.
And Bill Murray was like, fuck, yeah, maybe we could do something with that. Maybe that could work.
Right.
And then he said that he enjoyed being with his friends so much and being with that group of people so much because everyone's so funny. There was a lot of enjoyment in that room. He was
I'm
going to do it. And then when it came to production in November of 1988, yes, that's right. November of 1988 is when production started on Ghostbusters
Christ.
2. And it was released into cinemas in June. June of 1989.
Wow. Okay.
So when they started, the story was completely different. There was not one iota of what was originally pitched to Bill Murray. And he was like, you motherfuckers have changed the entire thing. Now we have to make this work. That we have to do something with this. I think they did. They did what they could. Yeah, I mean, they were still fucking shoot. They were still filming in May of 1989. It's a month before it was in the theaters.
Oh my
they were
God.
Still filming.
That's barely postal
and all
time.
This stuff.
Do you know what I mean? Like, by the time
they
sent the print of the film out, they've got like what?
Yeah.
It's literally like film
a
that
day.
Bit, splice it into the final edit, and then go right, post it.
Yes. That's exactly what it was. That is exactly what it was. A rushed production, a tricked cast, and a studio that were desperate for a sequel. This is why it feels rushed and messy, because it is.
Right, okay.
But also, I feel like the powers that be forced a situation. They forced a hand, right?
Right.
And the cast and crew did the best that they possibly could, which is great. But what they couldn't do is get the test audiences to react the way that the studio wanted. So it was constant reshoots, constant recuts, constant re-edits. And in the end, they were like, look, it's less than a month away before it's released. This is it. This is Ghostbusters 2. And there you have it.
I mean, there the thing is, it. Like, 37 million, which is how much it cost to make.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they said 200 was a disappointment.
Yes.
It feels like at that point you just go, here's another 6 months and another 10 million.
Yes.
You know, and you end up seeing that back and you end up with a better product. And you end up with the potential for maybe a third one.
Yeah, except for they started marketing almost immediately. So it was like do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the marketing run wasn't that much shorter than the production run of this film, which is crazy.
They already texted that they were coming back for a second round and it was didn't matter that they were pushing rope like that text had been sent.
Dude, all of your analogies today are like mad sexual. Is everything okay? Like, is everything okay?
It's how I de-stress, Ben, all right?
Okay.
Also, we do this podcast for 2 years and you notice that now.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. I see my, I see my problem. I feel like... Okay.
I've always been utter trash, Ben.
No, I know. I know. And it's why I love you. I don't know why I'm questioning it. It's why I love you.
Right.
So, are there any bits of this film that you did enjoy? Is there any like little gems where you were like, that's fucking fun?
Oh, there's loads. Look, there's loads and loads and loads that I enjoy.
Okay.
Like Peter McNichol as Janusz is an absolute delight.
Yes, buddy.
Like, I think of all the characters in this fucking film, Peter McNichol is incredible. Honestly, I am so impressed with him, and I am so surprised to see that he didn't do more after this.
Same.
Like, I tried to keep my research minimal because I knew that you were going to bring it, right? And I wanted to do that thing where you could be the one to tell me rather than a fucking laptop screen.
Yeah.
And so far, I'm loving it. Like, it's great. This is like just sitting down and being like, oh, gee. But I did decide to check out Peter McNichol, right?
Yeah.
He's done very well for himself as a working actor. I'm not going to say he's done fuck all.
No, he's good.
But compared to the respect that I would expect him to get and the roles that I'd expect to have thrown at him after this,
yeah,
very little. Because he's pitch perfect. He's just silly enough to be charming.
Yeah.
And terrifying when he needs to be. The searchlight eyes... Oh.
Oh man, that scene is fucking dreadful but hilarious at the same time. Right? Like it means nothing. It never comes back.
Nope.
But it's just the creepiest fucking image of
it's
that
just a creepy
tiny
moment.
Sassy guy ever. It's terrifying.
It's the contrast. We always bring this up, you know, that dramedies like in Chaplin or Martin McDonagh, the sadder you go, the funnier the joke, and the funnier the joke, the sadder the drama. And I feel like Ghostbusters, when it gets it right, and it does this occasionally in some of the later films, some of the more recent ones, if it's just scary enough, it makes the comedy funnier. But it's never that scary. It's what's happening in the context of a comedy movie. I wasn't prepped for Searchlight Eyes.
It's the suspense of what's coming next,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was a little hoo-hoo because I wasn't expecting it in this mess of a film. It was wonderful.
1,000%. That's a good bit. Peter McNichol is fucking banging in this film.
Yeah. And then everything else. There's no individual element of this film that's bad except the fact it's like having a great dessert and a great main and a great starter and a great snack and a great cocktail. And a great cigar, all just on the wrong plates. So it just doesn't come together at the wrong time.
They give you the cigar with the yogurt, right? And you're like, I don't want these two together, but they're fantastic on their own.
And then you've got a lovely chocolate mousse spread over your lamb chop, and you're like, what is happening? All of the individual elements are wonderful. They just don't come together into any meaningful way. They do. It's fine. It's fine. I do have questions, right? Because
hit me with them.
Right. What are the practical differences between the making of this and the making of Ghostbusters 1? Because you got into it there. There was the hype. I want to know what the hype was as well. Actually, let's start with that. What was the hype for this film? Because I cannot imagine this being an unanticipated film.
So the anticipation for this film, as you can imagine, Columbia wanting a bigger and better sequel as quick as possible. I've just covered, the cast didn't want to, the studio didn't want to make money. Audiences 5 years prior had been introduced to the highest grossing comedy film of all time at that point. And we're expecting it to at least live up to the original in every aspect, if not surpass it.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you? You've just had your fucking mind blown wide open by some of the funniest cunts to ever grace the cinematic screens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, not only is it a great cast, it's a great crew. And that's what really fucking sold the Ghostbusters. Every single person involved in that film.
Yeah, the effects were fantastic.
They helped start a fucking special effects studio because no other special effects house could take on the project. That's how dedicated they were to doing it. They were like, well, fuck it.
Yeah.
This dude from ILM wants to fucking set up on his own. We'll support it. There you go.
And they nailed the Ghostbusters 1 nailed it. So of course that, like, obviously there was the fact that the first one was mint.
Yeah.
There was also like the first one was a heavily merchandised film.
Crazy merchandised.
Right? I can imagine kids just with their little plastic Ecto-1 being like, Ghostbusters 2.
everyone in their fucking Ghostbusters t-shirts with their Ghostbusters fucking baseball caps and their stupid weird little figurines that I can't get my hands on because they're too expensive. Fuckers. And they had all of this shit. So it, like the anticipation from the audience side, it's going to be even bigger and even better. It's going to be
it's a 5-year wait too. So like that's not a small wait.
Exactly. And they used to do those little sort of like cut-ins in newspapers where it was so-and-so has been signed on to star in Ghostbusters 2. And it was like breaking news. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you'd read that in a paper and immediately be hyped for like the next 6 fucking months. It's insane. I think obviously it didn't. It didn't come through the way it had hoped. Columbia didn't get their bigger, better sequel. They made less money than the first one. They made more merchandise than the first one.
Right. So that leads to my first question, which was the first one was made under pressure. You know, it's your first movie. That's a huge nerves thing, right? You're going, oh shit, you know, to bring something brand new,
to bring something, to bring your project to the big screen.
You're now bringing something that you know is loved. Okay, they don't have the same amount of time that they did in the first one, but they worked the first one up in a year. This one is shorter, but it's not so much shorter that I would expect it to be this much worse.
Okay.
So like what changed?
So written by the same people.
Right.
The script went through insane amount of changes. There were so many variations. Like, so the original idea for Ghostbusters 2 was set in Scotland.
Right, okay.
It involved an underground sort of pneumatic tube, you know, like at the... Oh, you know,
the old pneumatic tube system that's mentioned once in this film.
Yes.
When they find the slime and they're like, it's the old pneumatic tube system. Okay.
Yes.
So that made it into the final edit, according to the studio.
See, we let you have that thing.
Right, exactly.
That was supposed to be a whole 3-day traveling scenario, like the Ghostbusters were in one of the old tubes from like a post office.
Right.
And then anyway, it was set in Scotland. It was based around like fairy folklore type stuff.
Right.
It could have been really fun. Like an international Ghostbusters movie would have been fun as fuck.
Right.
Weird fairy storylines would have been weird as shit. Think like The Labyrinth meets Ghostbusters 1. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
It'd be incredible.
Yeah.
And then it went through change after change after change after change. The studio was much more involved.
Right.
The cast, like all of the cast had a say in what was going on in the script because obviously they were trying to fucking make these scenarios work, and then they were like, okay, well, we filmed this entire section, but it tested shit.
Right.
So we're redoing everything. Now, instead of it being this, it's something wildly different.
And then there's too many cooks and it's everyone's got their sticking their oar in, and it's like things that are 90% good, someone tries to make 10% better for them, which makes it 50% worse for everyone else. Yeah.
I'm going to counter that, mate. I think that the reason that Ghostbusters 2 still has the appeal for me is because the cast had the say in the script.
True, we don't see what would have been released without them saying that. But then you get into trouser leg of, you know, time where it's like, well, if this butterfly effect of like, well, if it weren't for this shit idea that the studio had, then they wouldn't have had this good idea. It just seems underbaked, and the timeline makes a lot of sense, because it ended the franchise, right?
For a while.
For a long time.
Bill Murray was done. He was like, there is no fucking hope of a Ghostbusters 3 because I'm not getting tricked into this shit again. Like, it's just not happening.
Right, okay.
215 mil and a story that I had no fucking idea we were making is not anywhere near enough.
No.
Like, it doesn't matter the amount of money that I've earned from this franchise. No. There is not enough money on the planet to make me do this again, because I'm just shitting on the thing that I made
in
1984 that I'm so unbelievably proud of. I'm just shitting on it. It's like punching your own child in the face.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
The franchise kind of ended here, right? So, again, Columbia pushing for it way too quick.
Right.
All the objections from the cast and crew. Eventually, the studio tricking Murray into starring again. The production schedule, way more rushed than Ghostbusters 1. The many, many rewrites. And there was just fucking huge chunks of this movie have been cut.
Do we know anything that was cut? Was there anything? I mean, obviously, we got the pneumatic system. We've got the fairies.
It was never set in New York.
Ridiculous.
Everyone said that New York had been done. So it was never set in New York. Then it was set in New York. Then it was like, well, okay, well, it starts in New York and it can branch out a bit. And it was like, nah, we're just going to stay in New York.
There's a certain element where you can detect the bitterness, because this film takes every opportunity possible to shit on the people of New York and it and the city.
I get it.
Like, there's not a moment in this script where New York isn't mentioned, and they're like, and this fucking place full of pricks who've got a right to be pricks because they are pricks. it's just you can tell that someone in the writing room is like, for fuck's sakes, we're in New York. We hate it. We hate it. We hate it. I get it. Look, the goo thing.
Yeah.
The goo thing for me really stings, because I think it really smells of studio knowing that they can get that mad cheap. They're like, we have got a deal on 4 million units of ectoplasm.
Yeah.
And it would be really good if you could include this as a main part of the story so that we can sell
maybe
cheap toys of little pots of Ghostbusters slime.
Oh, dude, I'd still buy that today. I would still buy that today.
Of course you fucking would. You're talking about buying the concept art of the art crime that is the end of this movie. So, like,
hey, man, $5,000 is not, it's not that much. What's that, like, just shy of $4,000 in real money?
Yeah, yeah, for an A4 bit of paper.
It's A3, I'm assuming.
Oh, he's already Googled it.
No.
But no, the slime thing, like, there is no need for it to be slime. There is nothing in the script that requires a physical river of goo under New York City for any of the events of this film to happen.
Do you know who else had that idea? M. Night Shyamalan. For the movie The Happening, it doesn't have to be something that we can see. It could just be pollen on the wind. And look how that went, mate. If that would have happened. If Ghostbusters 2 was The Happening, are you joking?
It would have made $250 million. Easy.
It would have been an absolute smash. Easy.
Right, exactly.
Rewrite
Mark,
immediately.
Mark Wahlberg, back in 1989 when he was still blinding Asian grandparents. Ooh, what a box office draw.
They call me the wind. All right, mate. It's called pollen. Calm down. You're essentially hay fever. All right? Shut up. But listen, right? I've got some defenses for this film. Yes, the plot is messy.
Yeah.
But does that make it bad? 5 years after Ghostbusters 1 and the events that happen in Ghostbusters 1, no one believes in ghosts.
Right.
Like, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man fucking exploded and melted all over the New York City streets, and everyone's like,
it's nonsensical.
Nah, mate, no ghosts.
It's absolutely nonsensical.
But listen, it's relatable today, because even today we have people like flat earthers and weird conspiracy theorists. I'm not on about the fun conspiracy theorists, because them's my people. You know what I mean?
Right.
The people that can sit and debate whether Tremors and Footloose are in the same universe. You know what I mean? No, they can't dance in Footloose Town because it will attract the giant worms from Tremors.
Shai Halud.
Yeah. And also Kevin Bacon plays the same character. Do you know what I mean? That's a fun conspiracy theory.
That's a fun conspiracy theory.
I'm talking about the dangerous
Pizzagate,
cunts.
Less so. Yeah.
Pizzagate, flat earth, fake moon, lizard people rule the planet.
The eclipse is going to kill us all.
Yeah, that type of shit.
Apologies to any listeners who thought the eclipse was going to kill you. We're also sorry it didn't.
Yeah, also, mwah, mwah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Grow up.
Yeah. Okay, so the anti... I see it. Do you know what? I had the weirdest... Yeah. This is a complete tangent, but I swear it's quasi-related.
Okay.
Somebody was ill in work the other day, and I'm just like... It was literally 2 years ago that we were wearing masks because of transmissible diseases.
Yeah.
And then you're sat next to me juggling a shot of jelly in your windpipe, just raw dog in the air.
Oh,
and I'm just
the fucking worst thing that you've ever said out loud. That is the single worst thing I've ever heard you say.
What,
ever.
Worse than the Ian Watkins thing or the Liam Neeson thing?
No, you made me say that.
Yes, I fucking did.
Those were some of the worst things you've ever written. But the worst thing I've ever heard you say is that. That's disgusting.
You've not heard my music, if that's what you're
saying. But isn't it crazy?
Yeah, no. It is crazy. It is crazy. But I can see the forgetfulness. I do think that the mayor's maybe not got an out here, seeing as he was literally...
Oh, mate, listen, the mayor can fuck right off. He can fuck right off. Mm-hmm. He literally copies the exact same thing that he did in the last one, tries to get him locked up, realizes he's fucked up. Ups a daisy, now I need the fucking Ghostbusters. Where are they? Yeah, you, dickhead, they've come to you twice now, two separate films, and gone, this is a problem, and you've gone, nah, nah. 5 years ago, dick, they dug you out of a fucking hole and now you're running for governor. They are your fucking people. Listen to them, dick.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. I think it's a good representation for modern society. Like, I think it's still relevant today.
Yeah.
The similarity of Ghostbusters 1 story and circumstances, like, you know, the down and out, the get together to believe, the shut down by everyone, the continue to fight for the good, locked away and shut down again, and then eventually everyone realizes that the Ghostbusters were right all along and they need the support, and they get the support that they need to save the world. Listen, it seems lazy, but the formula worked 5 years before.
Right.
To make the highest grossing comedy film to date. If it ain't broke, don't fucking fix it. You know what
I
mean?
I don't know what you mean.
Weird shit.
Because here's the thing,
right?
The reason the first one worked, and you pointed this out yourself in the episode prior about Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah,
it works as an underdog story because the people making the film are in the position that the Ghostbusters are in, right?
Yes.
So you say to me, Ghostbusters sequel, and I say, well, they're now world famous,
yes,
and they have achieved everything that they want to achieve. Now what? What does that look like? And you can draw, the actors and the writers could have drawn from their own experience of being in the exact same position as the Ghostbusters.
Yes.
You are now world famous, internationally famous.
Yes.
What does that look like? Is there a Ghostbusters Institute? Is it a branch of the government?
Yes.
Is there some new information that's casting doubts on what happened in episode one? All this sort of stuff that you could do that would be fascinating, that I'd love to see.
Yes.
Because the Ghostbusters work best when they are going through what the writers are going through, when it's a personal story.
They are.
To have them be an underdog again.
They are.
When they've already...
They are the underdog again, though. The cast and crew are the underdog again. It's like they don't fully want to... Ghostbusters are done, right? In Ghostbusters 2, the Ghostbusters are done. They're down and out. They're all off doing their own shit, which is exactly what they were doing in real life, right?
Maybe.
And then they're forced back together through one person who knows them all and is friends with them all, right?
Yeah.
In the movie, it's Dana and she has a problem. In real life, it's their agent. And look, there was a problem with Columbia Pictures. Let's smooth it out. Let's do this.
Yeah. So their agent came in and said, my baby was kidnapped by the ghost of Charlie Chaplin. And just...
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, right, like, okay, my baby has been kidnapped by the previous CEO of Columbia Pictures.
Yeah, exactly.
The new CEO of Columbia Pictures wants to sit down with you. Let's get my baby back. Liam Neeson won't take my calls because he thinks it's pranks. You know what I mean?
Or he was going through some stuff at the time. But
Let's not. We've been there already. Let's not. But anyway, they're underdogs. They're forced into a situation where they have to band together with people that they wouldn't necessarily want to be banded back together with because they're all off doing their own shit.
Yeah.
And I love that this is the story of the film because it's very messy. It's very sort of like thrown together. It's very pressurized. You can tell that, like...
With a shit villain.
Some parts of the film... great villain. My argument for this is Viggo is a way better fucking villain than the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or Gozer. I'm gonna die on this hill. I'm gonna die on it.
What?
Like, I know that that's gonna piss people off, and I'm sorry.
He's a painting.
You're wrong.
He's a painting that can't fight
a
baby.
He's not a fucking painting, though.
He literally cannot fight a baby now. In the end, he turns into Max Headroom, and
it's
beaten
mint.
By goo.
Right. It is way more horror influence, right? A genuinely fleshed out creeper with a diabolical background, a diabolical plan, and a fucking... Dude, that guy's presence haunted my dreams. Like, even watching it now, I still get a little weird about
it. Just because you got scared of him.
I sat on a throne of blood. That's fucking gnarly, man.
Yeah, and then someone sang a song and I had to go back to sleep.
The people of New York City got together and sang a song with nothing but good vibes and positive energy, and it's fucking beautiful that took down the villain. Fuck you. It's incredible.
He's a great villain until someone holds a birthday party and then he's totally fucked. Yeah,
yes!
Got it.
Rob.
Right, okay.
He's mint. He can sit on a throne of blood until it's his birthday, and then he's fucked. But also he's not, because he doesn't have friends, because he murdered them all, because he's a creepy fuck.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't hate Goes. I Goes is mint, as is Stay Puft. They're both mint, but what I'm saying is Viggo does better as a villain because he's fucking terrifying.
And achieves
genuinely terrifying.
Like, the body count of Ghostbusters 1 is in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
And in Ghostbusters 2, it's not even the baby. Although...
Yeah, but also...
You ready for my fact of the week?
Go on.
You know the babies that played the baby?
Sure. The twins.
The twins. Did you know...
The twins.
...that one of them hung themselves?
In the film?
No, in real life. Hank Deutschendorf.
Did you say that this was a fun fact? Did you introduce this as a fun fact?
I said fact of the week.
Refresh it. Yeah. Fact of the week. Okay, that's good. All right. Yeah, we're right. Good. We're good. Sorry, I got a little bit twitchy there. Fun fact. Kid hanged himself. Brilliant.
He wasn't a baby at the time, Ben. He grew up.
Oh, okay. So maybe I need to grow up. Finish the fact. Sorry, man. I keep interrupting. My bad. Go on.
I just thought it was interesting that two men who've had mental health crises, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were a little kid watching that kid.
Yeah.
And it's important to shine a light that the baby hung himself. To be honest, I found that interesting. And then you were like, carry on with the fact. I'm like, that is the fact.
Oh, I see.
But clearly you don't care.
I do care. I also need to grow up because I was very, very on the point of, did that baby kill himself? Was it on purpose? Like, did they call cut? And then they turn around and he's like accidentally tripped over a camera wire and hung himself?
No, Ben.
I don't fucking know where the fact was going.
He was schizophrenic.
Oh, well, that's much less fun. Yeah. I mean, it's very sad, and I'm sorry that's happened.
And they never found the right treatment, and he was very, very good at Kenpo martial arts. He owned his own home, and he had a partner to share his life with.
Fuck, he was good at martial arts.
Yeah. He had a whole world and universe of stuff going on post-Ghostbusters 2.
And they couldn't find the right treatment for it.
No.
Fuck, man.
Do you want to play a game?
Kinda. I've written a game.
Right.
By written a game, I mean we were gifted this game a while ago. I'm bringing it back.
Oh, he's bringing it back.
It's called fucking... what's his name?
Oh,
remember?
What's his? Yeah.
Fucking
That guy.
What's his name? Them. That's it. That's the one. Them. It's still a working title. I haven't figured it out. Fuck you. This was gifted to us by a very dear friend who once, when we had a conversation together, he used The Amazing Spider-Man 2 as a reference for Jamie Foxx. Oh, yeah. You know that guy from that film? He was... Oh, what fucking film is it? Amazing Spider-Man 2. Yeah. You know that guy. And I'm like...
Not Django Andrew Unchained. Garfield, and he's like, or Ray. No, or Law Abiding Citizen. Or
none of this.
Or Baby Driver.
None of this. Amazing Spider-Man 2 is his go-to film for Jamie Foxx. And I fucking adore him so much for that.
Whereas mine would have been Strays.
Oh, that's upsetting. But kind of strange. Okay, so we're going to play fucking What's His Name. And first up.
Yeah.
It's that guy from, what's it called? The Fox and the Hound. You know, the animated one?
The Disney one.
Yeah. It's
1980s. That's got people in it.
Voices. Okay. You know what I mean?
Okay. The next one better be Fantastic Mr. Fox.
What is it? It's the strongest man in the world.
I've not seen that.
Fucking, you know him. From Silkwood, you know.
Silkwood.
Fucking Swing Shift. That's the one. He's in Swing Shift.
Overboard. Swing Shift.
He's in Tequila Sunrise. Come on, man.
He's
in Tango and Cash. He's in Tango and Cash.
Not Sisu. Fucking Bone Tomahawk. Kurt Russell.
Oh, there he is.
Fucking hell, I actually
good
got
job,
one.
Buddy.
Smash.
Good job,
I'm
buddy.
I'm proud of myself for that. They were,
mate, you
that
are.
Was nine
that
films
was
I've never heard of.
All right, I'm sorry. My bad. I'll start stronger on this one. Fucking what's her name? From Thelma and Louise. White Palace. She was in Sweetheart's Dance.
Was she in Earth Girls Are Easy?
I don't know that film.
Okay.
If I'm honest with you, buddy. I know Lorenzo's Oil. She was in Lorenzo's Oil. What about, what's her name? Safe Passage. This is in Safe Passage. You know her. Come on.
Is it Gina Davis?
No. It's,
oh, fuck.
She's
then it's
in,
the other
she's
one.
She's in Stepmom.
It's Thelma. Oh, Stepmom.
It is.
Oh,
no, it isn't.
It's Sideboard. Susan Sarandon.
It is Susan Sarandon. Yeah, go. Good job, man. Good job. All right. So third one. Fucking, what's his name? Oh, you know who I mean. Fucking Galaxy Quest. Happy Campers.
Okay. Sam Rockwell.
He was in Raising Genius.
Alan Rickman.
No, he was in.
I'm just naming Galaxy Quest actors now.
He was in
Tim
Waiting.
Allen.
No, he was in Dreamland. The Sasquatch Gang. You know who I mean. What else is it?
It's not Tim Allen, Sam Rockwell, or Alan Rickman.
No, Die Hard 4. He's in Die Hard 4.
Oh, you fuck. Is he in...
He's in Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
I've seen that once and I was very high at the time.
He's in Zack and Miri Make a Porno.
It's fucking Fishman. Fishboy.
Fishman?
Nazi Party. Justin Long.
Fucking yes. Fishboy?
Fishboy.
You mean the film where he famously becomes a walrus?
And they throw a fish at him.
Not a fish.
At the end, he has a fish.
Oh, I see. Yes, he does eat a fish.
He eats a fish.
I see now, yeah. That's not my... It is Justin Long, buddy. Right, are you ready for this one?
I mean, I am so close to overstimulated.
Yeah, this is not fun for you. Very fun for me. She's, what's her fucking name? She's in The Waterman. she's in
Sally Hawkins.
What is it? No, Zombieland Double Tap. She's in Zombieland Double Tap.
Zombieland.
What else is she? You know where she's from Someone Great. She's from
Is it Mila Kunis?
No, come on, buddy. She's from Drunk on Love.
Not a film, Ben.
It is a film. So what else is she in? Come on, buddy. Puerto Ricans in Paris.
Oh, okay. So she's either French or Puerto Rican.
No, she's in Trance. You know, Trance. Fire with Fire. That's what she's in. What else is she from? She's from... oh, God. What's she from? She's from This Girl's Life. Shattered Glass. Come on, buddy. No. We know this one.
You're going to have to name a film people have actually seen.
She's in Pluto Nash. All right, I mean, fine. She's in Men in Black 2.
No one saw Pluto. Oh, Men in Black 2, I've seen.
Yeah.
Men in Black 2.
She's in Pluto
Zombieland.
Black 2. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on. She's in
Men in Black
2.
It's only got one lady in it. It's got Daredevil lady, who's she's in every TV show on Disney.
She's in Clerks 2.
Fucking Rosario Dawson.
There you go, buddy. Oh, 4 for 4.
I feel like I've just done the world's most uncomfortable shit.
Yeah, you look uncomfortable, and I'm not going to lie, it's making me very happy.
I'm physically sweating.
Yeah, I know, I can see. It's visible. It's visible. But, buddy, you smashed it. Well done. Absolutely banged up job.
Thank you, buddy.
4 for 4. Comment corner?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do comment corner.
Let's do comment corner. I've got two.
Well, I told someone that they were going to be in comment corner.
You did.
And then I did that thing where I forgot to take a screenshot telling them.
Yep.
Did you get that one?
Well, listen, you go on a hunt for that. No, I didn't. You go on a hunt for that one. I'm going to read you my two that I did screenshot because I'm way, way prepared for this episode. The first comment of comment corner is from Adam Smart, who has comically put forward... From our last episode covering Modern Times by Charlie Chaplin, I queried who would keep track of Charlie Chaplin's 2,000 sexual conquests. And Adam Smart has turned around and said in our Discord, the people keeping track of Chaplin's 2,000 sexual conquests was child services.
Not funny. Not funny. I resent that because because I'd kind of, I had a joke written for next week that was along those lines. I'm just going to go on the line here now, mate, and say that that's not funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's very funny.
Wouldn't have made a joke like that ever. I think it's in poor taste, Adam Smart.
Thank you very much for that, Adam Smart.
Yeah.
I've got another one here from our YouTube. It's from one of our YouTube shorts.
YouTube. Let me strap myself in for psychic damage.
Oh, mate, it's incredible.
What have I got now? Buck teeth? A hump?
No, just the tiny eyes of a shrew and a face like Dracula. that's you. But this one's about me, and I'm quite happy with this.
Like Dracula bit a lobster.
Dracula 2024, the sad crab. So it is Steve Wager 3861 on YouTube commented on one of our reels. First comment, these guys suck. Lose the nose ring, you're not a teenage girl or a cow.
I mean, he
love that comment because
has a point.
Not only is that horrendously mean about my nose ring, but also incredibly true. Yeah. I am not a teenage girl or a cow, and I do have a nose ring.
It's nice that someone finally recognizes that, though.
Yeah, I think it's getting the attention that it deserves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why you got it. You got it so people would comment.
I lost a bet a long time ago, and if I take it out, I still lose that bet. So I'm being buried with this nose ring.
Ooh, what are the stakes?
Huh?
What do you lose if you take it out?
I can't even remember the bet, but I'm just not willing to lose it at this point. I'm too stubborn.
Fine.
I'm one of the most stubborn people that I know. I'm fine with it because I have to be, because I've committed to being fine with it, and I'm too stubborn to not be fine with it now. Do you know what I mean?
You can't remember what the forfeit is, so you're worried that you might end up getting fisted like a Muppet.
No, it was nothing serious. I just don't. I can't take losing.
Oh, it's pride.
I can't do it.
Okay, yeah. Fine, even worse. Yeah. So, funnily enough, I did find that comment. And it was actually a fun fact. So Skinny Drawn Boy got in touch with us on Instagram on our reel regarding modern times.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, just listening to the latest episode and wanted to mention checking out one of Chaplin's shorts called The Rink.
Okay.
I think he learned to roller skate during his early music hall days. So it was probably as natural to him as pratfalls.
Wow.
And
okay.
I thought that was A, great fucking research and great knowledge to have.
Incredible.
And B, proof that at least two people are listening to the Chaplin series. So you, sir, were wrong.
Mm. Yeah, to be fair.
It's 200% more successful than you expected. And I expected. So it's come out well.
Yeah. You know what? I can take that loss because I haven't stubbornly committed to never losing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I'm fine with that. I'll hold my hands up.
Unlike your virginity.
Fuck me. Right. I mean, one day.
One day.
That was Comment Corner. If you want to be part of next week's corner, drop us a line on our TikTok, our Instagram, our fucking Facebook, our YouTube. Join the Discord,
man. Everymovieeverpodcast.co.uk.
Sure. Go to the website, drop us an email, do what you like. Send us love. Send us hate. We do, and they're always lovely.
Mostly.
I'm gonna start reading out reviews as well. Leave us a review. Go to Spotify. Go to Apple Podcasts. Go to, I don't know, Discord. Just leave us a fucking review. Make it as mean, as biting as you want. 5-star review.
Don't do that.
Ben's
a
cunt. Shitty nose ring. 5 stars. You know what I mean?
But praise the content. Like, it's seen by people who haven't listened to us. Like,
oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
Don't invite people to tank our numbers further, Ben.
No. I would never. That's all the time we have this week, but we shall be back next week with Charlie Chaplin's Limelight.
Maybe, because I still haven't rewatched it since I was a kid, and it might not be the film I remember. But hey, it's locked in now. It's been said. We love you all dearly.
It better be Limelight. I've already watched it twice. I've done a bit of research. Not of the film, because I want you to do that and teach me the ways, but I have looked into Chaplin's troublesome past with children, and it's very sad.
We love you all dearly. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It means the world. Now, Ben's going to give you a little Monday motivation whilst I cosplay a society and tell you to consume.
Be like Vigo, you know what I mean? Like, you've seen New York City get shit minced by a fucking marshmallow man, and yet you still haunt a painting, specifically go after one baby in a city arguably full of babies, and then get defeated by a fucking sing-song. I mean, sit on your throne of blood, do your evil biddings, but at the end of the day, just be sensitive to a little bit of the good vibes. You know what I mean? Be as sad, be as mad as you like. But fucking hell, if Jackie Wilson can't fucking snap you out of it, I don't know what can at this point. You know what I mean? Your love lifting me higher than I've ever been lifted before. See, it's even got fucking Dracula sad crab singing, man.
Right, that's enough of that.
Good vibes, baby!